The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Episode 176 of the Read to Lead podcast is brought to you in part by Cloud Accounting Software FreshBooks with a 30-day free trial just for you, and you don't even need a credit card. To find out more, go to freshbooks.com/read to lead and enter Read to Lead in the How Did You Hear About Us section.
Everyone can benefit from a mentor. And, you know, I say that because I think by the same token that all of us can also benefit by being a mentor.
Welcome to the Read to Lead podcast with Jeff Brown. Jeff believes that if you desire to achieve true success in business and in life, then consistent and intentional reading is a must. The Read to Lead podcast will not only help you narrow this ever-important reading list, but also bring you key insights and valuable feedback from some of today's most successful and inspiring authors. And now, here's Jeff.
Hello and welcome once again to the podcast that is dedicated to your personal and professional growth. Whether you have a passion for leadership, personal development, productivity, career, business, marketing, sales, entrepreneurship, we've got you covered. In just a moment, you and I will sit down with Claire Diaz-Ortiz. She's the co-author, along with Ken Blanchard, of the new book, 1 Minute Mentoring, How to Find and Work with a Mentor and Why You'll Benefit from Being One. Not surprisingly, I'll ask Claire to share about why everyone should have a mentor, the many benefits to being a mentor, how to effectively structure your mentor-mentee relationships, and much, much more. Claire was originally scheduled to appear on the Read to Lead podcast about 3 years ago for another book she'd written around that time, and she canceled the interview. That's right. More on that in just a few minutes. First, I want to share with you a bit about our sponsor for this episode, Cloud Accounting Software, FreshBooks. If you're a freelancer or if you're leveraging the margins of life for your side hustle or attempting to start or run your own business, you need an accounting solution. And I don't know of a better one than FreshBooks. In fact, I've been using it since late 2009 and I've never considered anything else. It just works and it's very simple and easy to use. And it wasn't too long ago that they launched an all new version of their software, which is even easier and simpler than it was before. With it, you can, among other things, create and send professional-looking invoices in about 30 seconds. I've actually timed it, and yes, you can. Set up online payments with just a couple of clicks and get paid days faster. And one of my favorite things is you can see when a client has viewed an invoice. You know, sometimes if a client hasn't paid an invoice as promptly as we would like, we might think, well, maybe they didn't get it. Maybe they didn't see it. Well, FreshBooks shows you whether or not they've viewed it so you're better informed. Because you listen to the podcast, you can take advantage of FreshBooks' 30-day unrestricted free trial. No credit card needed either. To claim your unrestricted free trial, which means you get access to all of FreshBooks' features, just go to freshbooks.com/read to lead and enter Read to Lead in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Again, that's freshbooks.com/read to lead. Well, in addition to being an author, Claire Diaz-Ortiz is also a speaker and technology innovator, and she's been named one of the 100 most creative people in business by Fast Company. She was also an early employee at Twitter, as evidenced by her first name only Twitter handle. I'm sure that's hard to get these days. She spent 5.5 years there. She's the author of 7 books in all, including Twitter for Good, Design Your Day, and Hope Runs. She speaks internationally on social media, business, and innovation, and she writes a popular business blog at ClaireDiazOrtiz.com and serves as a LinkedIn influencer. Now, her latest book, the one we're going to chat about a bit today, co-written with Ken Blanchard, is called 1 Minute Mentoring, How to Find and Work with a Mentor and Why You'll Benefit from Being One. Claire, it's a pleasure. Welcome to the Read to Lead podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. We were just talking about how I was supposed to be here a few years ago, but then went into early labor. And so that did not happen. So it's great to be here 3 kids later.
Yeah. You since had twins, haven't you?
Yeah. So since the last time we were supposed to talk, I've had three, which is kind of ridiculous.
Wow. Now, was it twin boys?
Twin boys.
Yeah. Boys. Well, congratulations. And I know that was a little bit of a rough year, wasn't it? Weren't they born early?
Yeah, they were born. I had a really rough pregnancy with them. And then they ended up being born 9.5 weeks early. So they spent 2 months in the NICU. We live in Argentina. And so 2 months in the NICU down here, which was kind of a wild experience. Just, I mean, I've lived in a different country for a number of years, but I've never had a really intense medical experience in another country. And it was really weird to me. It was like, whoa, this is really blowing my mind. This is a whole new level of things I didn't want to experience in my life.
Wow. I can only imagine that. Wow. You're a brave woman. I'll put it that way.
I think I was just forced into it and so I had to do it. Yep.
Well, let's talk a bit about mentoring, one of my favorite topics. And I want to ask you first, Claire, what are some of the questions that we should be asking ourselves to help us determine whether or not we should be seeking a mentor in the first place?
Well, I mean, you know, I don't want to kind of spoil it, but I think most of us need mentors. So I really think to me, there's really only one real question.
Yeah.
And it is, you know, are you willing to put in the work to make some changes in your life, essentially? And putting in that work means, you know, being vulnerable in a relationship, making some time for it, and being willing to listen to someone else's ideas, right? So I feel like that is really the question. Are you willing to kind of do the work? Because I think pretty much everyone can benefit from a mentor. And, you know, I say that because I think by the same token that all of us can also benefit by being a mentor. Essentially, you know, there's no sort of, if all of life is going from A to Z, you know, there's no point along the trajectory in which you become too awesome to need a mentor, or no point at which you're, you know, too bad off to, you know, have a mentee, essentially. And I think that's really what's important about the concept of mentoring, really.
As I look around, it seems to me, maybe you have research on this or have seen evidence of this yourself, it seems to me that there are quite a few people who aren't taking advantage of having a mentor in their life. Any thoughts as to why more people don't see the importance of this?
Sure. I think, I mean, from what I've sort of looked at and the research I've been doing, I mean, the one thing I will say is I do think corporate mentoring programs have gotten more popular in the last decade. So we can sort of put that to the side. But I think in general, the reason people don't get involved in mentoring has to do with this idea that they think it is harder than it is, essentially. You know, they have this concept that it's first of all, very hard to find a mentor or potentially a mentee. It's hard to know how to best navigate that relationship. And it's hard to sort of measure if you're really getting anything out of it, essentially. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of inertia going into this, right?
Yeah. And thankfully, the book addresses many of these issues to make the process a whole lot simpler. What would you say to someone, Claire, who's maybe being asked to mentor somebody, but has that sort of mentality, oh, it's going to take too much time, or it's like, you know, taking on another full-time job, but there's just resistance on their side. How would you address that resistance?
Well, I think sort of there are two kind of responses to that. I think probably the most important response is that a positive mentoring relationship is ultimately going to energize you, you know, no matter if you're an introvert or an extrovert. The idea is a positive mentoring relationship will give you kind of more energy and more excitement for your own life. So, you know, to the one side, there is that. But then kind of on the other side of just the practicalities, it doesn't take that much time in terms of training. You know, there isn't a lot of training involved. Being a mentor is basically about bringing what you know about life to the table. And in terms of time, you know, what we talk about in 1 minute mentoring is this idea that regular engagement is important, but you can kind of decide what regular engagement is. Regular engagement might mean regular emails, you know, 3 emails a week back and forth. It might mean 1 meeting a week on the phone or on Skype or in person. Whatever it is, it just needs to be regular. And then I would also say, sort of a best practice with that regularity is you do kind of want to front load that or stack it up front. So if you are beginning a new mentoring relationship, it's important to put in a lot of time up front with the person so that you build that rapport, right? So that then after 3 months of weekly meetings, maybe then you realize, hey, you know, we're kind of in a groove right now. We can do this once every 2 weeks, say. But I mean, you know, I think from the time and energy standpoint, it's not a lot of investment. And I think the potential of what you can gain from it is just so wonderful that I just wish more people got involved in mentoring relationships.
Well, speak to some of the different types of mentor-mentee relationships. You say that some of what you look for in a mentor-mentee is going to depend on the type of relationship you're seeking. So speak to some of the different types and the importance of thinking about some of the qualities that matter to you and how to find those.
Sure. So I think one of the sort of most obvious types of mentoring partnerships that perhaps many of us are familiar with, or maybe this is the type of mentoring partnership we have in our head, is this adult to adolescent one, mm-hmm. right? So you see some large nonprofit organizations throughout the world that do this, like Big Brothers, Big Sisters, right? You pair an adult with an adolescent, and the adult helps guide the adolescent in making good choices for his or her life. And at the same time, the adult probably gain something out of it as well, right? So that's sort of a typical one that can be very, very effective. Then you've got sort of the older person version of that, which I like to call the cross-generational mentoring relationship, which is very much me and Ken Blanchard, right? Mm. Blanchard and I wrote 1 Minute Mentoring together, and we are, 40 years apart in age. And the idea here is that we are in this relationship together. We're learning from one another, right? So you've got that. I think a very common one sort of in businesses these days is this new hire mentoring partnership, or sometimes a peer-to-peer mentoring partnership. So essentially, I get hired into a company and I get paired with someone to help show me the ropes of what it means to work either in that industry or just within that firm, essentially. So those are just sort of a few types of mentoring relationships. If you're thinking about kind of entering into a mentoring relationship, you've really got to know what kind of mentoring relationship you're going after, because otherwise you're going to be definitely knocking down the wrong doors. So I think first and foremost, probably the easiest thing for people to recognize is, hey, do I want this to be within my company or corporation or not? And once you have sort of made that determination, then you get a definitely better sort of sense of what your path is to finding a great mentor.
You touched a bit on this, that it's not a one-way scenario. It's not the mentee getting all the benefit. What are some examples of some ways a mentee can impact their mentor that you've seen?
Sure. So, one of my biggest sort of mentoring relationships in my life is about 10 years ago, I ran a small nonprofit organization out in Kenya. And I became basically the mentor and legal guardian to a boy, Sammy, that I brought back to the U.S. for a number of years to finish his high school, right? And so we had sort of a classic sort of I was the mentor, he was the mentee relationship. I was this sort of older sister guardian figure to him, right? Mm-hmm. Now, I think from the outside, it was very easy to see maybe what he was gaining from the relationship, right? Mm-hmm. But of course, I think at the end of the day, I probably gained far more from it than he did. I've learned so much from him in the last 11 years of knowing him. And so I think that's sort of a perfect example of a relationship that can kind of really go two ways. And, I like to say that when I first started working on this book with Ken, I really didn't understand the extent to which this was going to be a two-way street as well, right? Wow. Because, again, in my relationship with Sammy in the past, I had been the mentor and I had gained from it and learned from it, but I still didn't really think of him as a mentor to me anyway, right? I sort of thought it was, he's my mentee, but yes, I've learned a lot. And with Ken, there was sort of this new understanding that I really came to through the process of writing this book. When we met 3-4 years ago and started talking about this, I really had this vision that he would be saying all the wise things and I would be, taking them in. And he really made it clear early on that that was not the case, that this was a partnership, that he was going to learn from me, I was going to learn from him, we were each going to teach each other. And I think it's been such an incredible experience writing this book because it has been such an incredible experience learning about what mentoring and what a really positive mentoring relationship can really be and can really do.
I once went on a missions trip about 15, 16 years ago. And I remember my mindset at the time, Claire, was as I set out, of all the wisdom I was going to impart and all the lives I was going to change by going on this trip. And guess what? It was sort of the other way around. So I left there a changed person through the people that I was able to meet and the relationships I was able to foster while I was there. Talk a bit about the importance of putting the personal before the tactical as you begin to foster these relationships.
So this is a really interesting one. So early on in his career, you know, Ken credits a lot of his success to a number of great mentors. And early on in his career, he had a mentor that taught him the importance of putting, as the mentor called, essence before form. And the first time Ken sort of explained this to me, I really didn't know what he was talking about. But the idea is that especially in this day and age of, you know, productivity and wanting to get things done and wanting to achieve and be successful, we can kind of skip over the relational side of a relationship and just get to sort of the logistics, right? So skipping over essence of that sort of shared values. Do we have rapport? Do we get along with one another? Do I feel like I can call you up and ask you a question that I have? We skip over that to jump right into form, right? Form being, so do you really want a mentor? And how often are we going to meet? And how long are these meetings going to be? And, you know, will you respond to my email if I write it, or will it be your assistant responding, right? And a lot of this, I think, you know, comes from maybe the overeagerness of some of us millennials, or I'm not even sure what it is, but it's so accurate. And I recognized a lot of sort of myself in some of these concerns that, you know, Ken basically brought to the forefront, saying, hey, look, in these relationships, you've really got to put essence before form. And, you know, so the idea, and this is what we share in 1 Minute Mentoring, we basically share a story of a mentor and a mentee meeting for the first time and then learning that, you know, it's about talking to one another and seeing if you two are a fit before you ever get to that sort of logistical part of the partnership.
Well, Ken and Claire have leveraged the letters of the word mentor to describe the various stages of the process. Now, we don't have time to go into each of those, nor do I want to, because I want people to buy this wonderful book ultimately. But I do want to touch on a couple of them if we can, starting with the mission statement, the M of that acronym. Why is it so important that the two of you craft this statement for your mentoring relationship?
Sure. So, you know, I'm a nerd, so I love this idea of coming up with a mission statement in many different areas of your life, right? But I understand this might seem kind of overwhelming and strange to some people. And so I really want to say that it's not. This is really a simple statement of intent. It's a simple statement of, you know, why are we together in this mentoring partnership and what are we trying to achieve out of it? Because ultimately, without that, you're driving without a map, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So it's just important to kind of lay down why you're both there and what you want out of it. And it can be very, very simple, but I do think it requires a conversation and, you know, a moment of pen to paper of clarifying the result of that conversation.
How would you define the difference between somebody who calls himself a mentor and someone who's in the position of being a coach? And is there a little bit of overlap between those two, would you say, or no?
Well, I think there is, in practicality, a lot of overlap between those two, especially in the last 5 years, right? I mean, I can go online and be reading the blog of someone I like and seeing a tab at the top and it says mentoring or coaching. You know what I mean? So I think there is a lot of conflation. Those two words are conflated a lot. The difference I see, and the difference sort of we sort of came up with and clarified as we were writing the book, is that coaching typically is about working on or working through a specific problem, and it's usually with a goal of some kind of increased performance, right? Mm-hmm. Now, the difference is that mentoring is often much more holistic, and it's not about performance. So I would say that those are the differences. You know, in mentoring, you're going to get someone who, if in a good mentoring relationship, you're going to have a mentor who's going to help you sort of holistically look at maybe your whole life or maybe just, you know, the professional side of your life, but all of those things, not just going to, you know, coach you in how to be a better salesperson or, you know, how to be a better public speaker, essentially. So I would say those are kind of two big differences, I should say. Now, but I fully agree that kind of the world is often conflating those two terms.
Yeah, very much so. Well, one advantage to a mentoring relationship, of course, is the networking opportunities that it can present. Should we assume the mentor has quite a bit more to offer in that regard?
I think that is a safe assumption, right? I think when you especially think that, you know, you're thinking about your mentors, maybe professional or business connections, you're going to think they probably have a bigger network than you do. But that being said, the importance of thinking about networking in the relationship is realizing that it's not always that way, right? And that oftentimes sort of the mentee has sort of the fresh eyes on something and can provide networks or connections that are just as valuable. And, you know, in the book, we basically share a story of the way that that happens, right? So the way that the mentor sort of thinks she is wise and has all the answers, but in reality, it's the mentee who is able to provide some connections that are really valuable as well.
I've seen in some mentor-mentee relationships, those wanting to, you know, put their best foot forward, put on their game face, maybe not be as truthful sometimes as they should be. What does tactful honesty do for a mentoring relationship in your view?
Well, this is interesting because I actually think there's sort of two sides of this tactful honesty thing. So On the one side, I would say, you know, tactful honesty is about being kind when you are perhaps being directional, I would say. Mm-hmm. So if you as a mentor see that your mentee could be considering a different direction in some choice he or she is making, it's about being kind as you try to, you know, convey what you think is your wisdom, right? Now, on the other kind of plane of this idea of honesty, I think what you also have is this idea of authenticity, because I think being in a mentoring relationship at its best really should be about being honest, right? But that doesn't necessarily mean that you need to sort of let it all hang out there. You know, I remember when we were writing the book, at one point we actually had, it was an early reader or an editor, I'm not sure, who kind of commented on the fact that they found it strange that the mentor, which in the book is a, you know, she's a 60-year-old media executive, they found it strange that she was so open about areas of her life that she was struggling with, right? And they said, this doesn't seem realistic for someone of her position. And it was an interesting moment because that critique kind of forced us to say, wait, what do we think about this? And ultimately we clarified, you know, we said, no, we do think this is realistic. We do think a good mentoring partnership is about being authentic. So it's interesting how honesty can kind of mean two things in a mentoring relationship. And both of those things are very important and very essential to sort of think about with intent.
Is it ever appropriate? I guess maybe this is a two-part question. There are certainly some ways of thanking a mentor that seem obviously appropriate, like a personal note or something of that nature. But are things like, you know, dinner at their favorite restaurant or a donation to their favorite charity or something like that, just to show your appreciation, is that appropriate in your view in these relationships, or does it just depend on the relationship?
I mean, I say absolutely, but I'm also laughing as you ask me that question, because, you know, if we look at the five languages of love, my language is gifts, which is kind of embarrassing, honestly. So I'm like, that's absolutely appropriate, because that is how I would receive gratitude, and that is how I would naturally go and give it. So, yes, I think so.
That question, by the way, came from a member of our private Facebook group. Another question that came from the group has to do with sort of, how do you know when this is over, when it comes to an end, as it were? Do you review the relationship success thus far, and what goes into determining whether or not you renew and continue or cut the cord, so to speak?
So this is, I love this question, because I was talking to someone recently who was saying, oh, I guess they were describing a mentor relationship they're currently in which they are the mentor. And they were saying, you know, it's just been a couple of years and I feel like we've kind of maybe come to the end of you know, our use for one another. Should I be breaking up with my mentee? And I said, no, don't break up with your mentee, because I think what's so important to realize is that, you know, we're all going to have in an ideal world, we're all going to have many different mentors, mentees in our life. And the idea isn't that, you know, you have to sign on the line when it's done. The idea is that you can just sort of back burner that relationship and then have that person in your, you know, in your network, in your, in one of your inner circles, let's say the second ring of your inner circle, right? So that you can call upon them for advice, either for giving or receiving, at some point in the future when you maybe need it again. And I think, you know, Ken has more years on me, so he has more experience to go by with this. But, you know, as he says, he's had mentoring relationships that, you know, were very active for a time and then, you know, went dormant and then became active again. And I think that that is such an important concept in mentoring, right? And maybe again, that's one more difference perhaps between a mentoring and a coach.
Yeah, good point. Well, I want to ask you a couple of questions, if I may, Claire, that aren't directly related to the book. But before I do that, is there anything else from the book you want to make sure we walk away with?
No, I love this book. Had a great time writing it with Ken, and I think it's of value.
Well, I totally agree. It's a light 130 pages compared to most business books that seem to think they all have to be 250 pages in length. I appreciated that and also found it to be delightful. It's a business parable, in case you didn't know that. And the concepts are shared through the relationships in this story that you're reading about. And I loved it. I wanted to ask you what you've been reading lately, Claire, that has had an impact on you. What would you say are the one or two titles that come to mind as books that have been really valuable reads in your life?
Sure. So I was reviewing kind of my list of books read this year when I came up with this. And so I'm going to say two that I really enjoyed this year that I think might be of value to your audience. Yeah. So one of them is a book which I just found fascinating. So it's called The Art of Asking by Amanda Palmer. And it is interesting because I had bought it like 2 years ago in an airport bookshop, not knowing anything about it, but, you know, thinking, okay, this is some sort of good sort of businessy nonfiction book. It's called The Art of Asking, How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Let People Help. Right. Mm. But I sort of put it off, not realizing how engaging it would be essentially. So Amanda Palmer, she used to be one of those statues, those like human frozen statues in Harvard Square. And so the book starts with her sort of becoming this performance artist on the street and what that sort of taught her about this concept of asking people for help. Mm. And then, you know, it follows her as she becomes basically an artist and an activist and, you know, releases all these albums and does all this sort of in an online world and what it means to ask in an online world. So I really recommend this book. It's really a fun read. And then the other book I would recommend that I think just has not gotten enough good vibes is called Super Better. And there's a great, I guess actually both of these books have great TED Talks with them, but Super Better, Jane McGonigal, and basically she's a researcher and in gaming, and she basically shows in gamification and gaming, and it's a book about the idea that, you know, we can learn from gamification things that can help us to improve our lives and our mindsets and our you know, work and businesses and families. And it's really, really unique. And I wish more people read it. So those are sort of two books that I really liked this year.
Well, I appreciate you shedding some light on some rare gems. I don't think either of those books have been recommended before, so thanks for that. And you reminded me as you were talking, I think it was your blog I was reading not too awfully long ago. Don't you read, or maybe at one time you read, somewhere in the neighborhood of 200 books a year?
I do. So I always used to read 200 books a year. Then I had one child and it was 150 and now I have three children under three. And so this year it's 100, I think, but yeah, I've always read a lot. I think for the next couple of years though, it's going to have to be 100 though, because with the tiny little kids, they take up a lot of time.
Oh, I can imagine. I get comments all the time asking about how I read 50-ish books a year. And I'm like, I got nothing on you. So you're doing way better. Well, I know you do a fair amount of public speaking across the globe, and I always love to ask the question, you know, what are some of your tips for delivering an impactful and memorable public talk? What do you try to accomplish whenever you're up in front of an audience?
So I think I sort of have two key tips that have sort of always guided me. And one of them I stole from someone else, and sadly, I don't even remember who I stole it from. It's been one of those things that's been in my head for years. But you know, the concept being, if you are giving a talk, the only question you should be asking the organizer is, what do you want those people to feel when they leave the room? And I think this question really reshaped kind of the way I think about public speaking, simply because, you know, I was so used to having, you know, before you do give speech, you often have sort of like a pre-call with the organizers and you discuss a lot of the logistics, and then you go in with the topic that you think they're going to like and this sort of thing. But often you don't discuss, even if you maybe talk about what the topic is, how they actually want an individual in that audience to feel after they leave. Because I find that the answer to that question shapes how that speech goes. Even if it's a speech I've done many times before, it shapes the angle I use, and it shapes the way I start and the way I end. And so that's, you know, the question that I think is the most important that you need to know the answer to before you speech. And then, you know, the second thing for me that has just always been really important is that I think public speaking needs to revolve around stories, not slides. And so I try to, you know, use 25% of the slides I want to use, and, you know, 10 times as many stories as I would normally use. So I think thinking in terms of stories, not slides, is really valuable.
Yeah, that's been a struggle for me. I depend more than I need to on slides. I have gotten to the point where I'm very image driven and text light. So I've made that transition, but I want to get to the point where I'm putting story number one, and slides are just, if they're there at all, they're just there to supplement those stories. Great advice. I appreciate that. I know the book's only been out for a few weeks. You're bringing new humans into the world. You got a lot going on. Is there anything work-wise you and your team are working on now that you're excited about? Anything you want to share or make sure we know?
Yeah, so we're to sort of, in honor of the book's launch, we're running a big summit in starts September 1st. It's called the Success Mentor Summit. We've got, I think, 80 speakers talking about, basically 80 speakers who are, you know, your sort of one-on-one virtual mentors, telling you about different sort of themes when it comes to success. And so, yeah, that's a big, big online celebration for this one minute mentoring book. And it's coming out in September 5th.
Can we go to your website to find out more info about that?
Yep. Okay. Yep. Or you can go to successmentorsummit.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Claire, for being here. We appreciate you writing it with Ken, and so thankful for you giving of your time so freely.
Thank you so much for this. I really, really appreciate it.
If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know I often encourage you to consider connecting with our guest on Twitter, among other places. I can't think of a time when that would be more appropriate than it is today, in that Claire was one of those early Twitter employees. And her Twitter handle, again, is just her first name. It's @Claire on Twitter. That's C-L-A-I-R-E. For a summary of this episode, including the books that Claire recommended you check out, you can visit the show notes page created especially for this episode, and you'll find that at readtoleadpodcast.com/176 for episode 176. And you help the Read to Lead podcast when you visit our sponsor and take advantage of that 30-day free trial from cloud accounting software, FreshBooks. Just go to freshbooks.com/read to lead and be sure to enter Read to Lead in the How Did You Hear About Us section. If you desire to get better at taking what you're learning in the books you're reading and applying it to your life, then you might want to consider Read to Lead University. We have a thriving community at Read to Lead University where we together read a book each and every month. We meet live to talk about it at the end of the month. In fact, oftentimes, the author of that book is joining us as part of that conversation. Certainly many other benefits to Read to Lead University as well. To find out more about it and to check out all the details, visit readtoleaduniversity.com. We'd love to have you, as there are a few more spots open right now. Again, that's readtoleaduniversity.com. Well, that's going to do it for this week. Thanks so much for listening. I look forward to seeing you next time for the next episode of the Read to Lead podcast.
Thanks so much for listening to the Read to Lead podcast. As a subscriber, we challenge you to be more than just a passive listener. Become a vital member of the community. Visit us on the web at readtoleadpodcast.com. Until next time, remember, leaders read and readers lead. We'll be right back.